Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Melanie C., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, October 25th, 2018, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're in the chapter to employers. We are on page 147, starting with paragraph 2. There is another thing you might wish to do. Reading through 5 paragraphs today, which ends at the bottom of the 3rd paragraph on page 148, which says, give your worthwhile man a chance. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Marissa E., the 12 Traditions, Libby E., and reading the text today is Kathy Jo P. and Lynn S. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, that would be Wednesday, October 24th, 2018, is 12095, 12,095. And then for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting, that would be Thursday, October 25th, 2018, 12099, 12,099. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose. To carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Marissa E. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater near Los Angeles. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Marissa E. I will now ask Libby E. to read the 12 traditions.
Thanks, Melanie. Good morning. I'm Libby E., recovered compulsive eater in New York. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except the matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Libby E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 147, paragraph 2. There is another thing you might wish to do, reading through 5 paragraphs today, which ends at the bottom of the 3rd paragraph on page 148, which says, give your worthwhile man a chance. And I will ask Kathy Jo P. to unpack those 5 paragraphs for us today by reading them first. Thank you. Good morning, Kathy Jo.
Good morning. This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. There is another thing you might wish to do. If your organization is a large one, your junior executives might be provided with this book. You might let them know you have no quarrel with the alcoholics of your organization. These juniors are often in a difficult position. Men under them are frequently their friends. So for one reason or another, they cover these men, hoping matters will take a turn for the better. They often jeopardize their own positions by trying to help serious drinkers who should have been fired long ago, or else given an opportunity to get well. After reading this book, a junior executive can go to such a man and say approximately this, look here, Ed, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me on the spot every time you get drunk. It isn't fair to me or the firm. I've been learning something about alcoholism. If you are an alcoholic, you are a mighty sick man. You act like one. The firm wants to help you get over it. And if you are interested, there is a way out. If you take it, your past will be forgotten, and the fact that you went away for treatment will not be mentioned. But if you cannot or will not stop drinking, I think you ought to resign. Your junior executive may not agree with the contents of our book. He need not, and often should not show it to his alcoholic prospect. But at least he will understand the problem and will no longer be misled by ordinary promises. He will be able to take a position with such a man which is eminently fair and square. He will have no further reason for covering up an alcoholic employee. It boils right down to this. No man should be fired just because he is an alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. If he cannot or does not want to stop, he should be discharged. The exceptions are few. We think this method of approach will accomplish several things. It will permit the rehabilitation of good men. At the same time, you will feel no reluctance to rid yourself of those who cannot or will not stop. Alcoholism may be causing your organization considerable damage in its waste of time, men, and reputation. We hope our suggestions will help you plug up this sometimes serious leak. We think we are sensible when we urge that you stop this waste and give your worthwhile man a chance. Well, I am going to say when I started to work when I was about 14, I worked as a dishwasher, a waitress, later at nursing homes. And in all of those jobs, A, I stole food, lots of food. And B, I had conflict on an ongoing basis. Explosions, gossip, conflict. I often say I probably was more fired. I was probably fired more than the average Joe. And it was not because I wasn't talented at my job or didn't know what I was doing. It was because of conflict. And I am grateful that about 7 years ago, I did a four-step, and this is before I came to this meeting, and I did an amend with someone who I ended up making peace with. He was a very significant person in a job that I had, and even though I was still not 100% abstinent, I'm so glad I did that amend, because literally after I finished my fourth step, when I came to this meeting, he died 2 days later. And what I want to focus on here more than being drunk on the food is how I showed up. I want to say I was drunk on my ego, drunk on myself, and showing up constantly wanting my way, my agenda, my selfish needs, and not being a team player, cooperative, and a person that shows up of service and peace like I'm striving to be today. In April, I had a conflict at work, and thank God I have learned to go to the guides that help me see my part. And one of my fellows said to me, "It's your job to make your boss look good." And I was all worried about myself looking good and what everybody thought of me. And she helped me to reposture so that I would realize, indeed, it is my job and to be of service. And hate to admit it, but I had another conflict at work about a month ago. And when I went to do the amend with my coworker, she said to me, "You are hard to work with." Yep, that was said to me a month ago. And then later she said, "But you are endearing." And I took that word endearing and I realized where it says, give your alcoholic a chance, he's worthy of a chance. I believe that's a direct message for me from God. God finds me endearing. That's who I need to worry about, how I look to, is my God. Not what everybody else thinks of me, because as long as I'm right with God, I'm going to show up of service and be a good employee. And the other thing I want to say is, since I'm not drunk on myself nearly as bad as I used to be and drunk on the food, I am so much more productive. I am writing things and doing things at work that I never dreamed I could do. And that is such a gift of this program, and I feel like such more of a valuable employee. And the more that I continue to work on myself and learn to be a team player and of service,
the better my job goes and the more valuable I am in there and not wasting their time as they deal with the conflicts. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Kathy Jo. Just a reminder, we are on page 147 in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Second paragraph, there is another thing you might wish to do, reading through five paragraphs today, ending on the bottom of paragraph 148, third paragraph of 148. Who else would like to comment?
Marin
their
from
experience.
Los Angeles.
Hi, Marin.
Bruce E.
Hi, Bruce.
Julie E.B.
Hi.
Julie E.B. We have Marin K., Bruce E., and Julie E.B. Good morning again, Marin. We're up with you.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you, Melanie, and thank you for sharing. Welcome. Yes, this part of the big book is interesting to me. I wish my I was working in 1980 in an industry that was of my creative industry that I did film and TV. And, you know, I wish my agent had this book. I am now friends with him, by the way. I made amends to him, and we're friends now. But it says here, look, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me on the spot every time you get drunk. I'm sure that that agent that I'm friends with heard that I was getting drunk and getting fucked up and I was, you know, not doing well. Nobody read this book. I wish everybody that was employing people would read this book. I went away for treatment, and I still didn't stop doing what I was doing with food and or other substances. No man should be fired just because he's an alcoholic. Well, I didn't get fired. I just lost everything because I was so busy in my disease of, you know, overeating and all of that, that I didn't have time to do a good job in my work. And it says, we think it's sensible when we urge you that you stop the waste and give your worthwhile man a chance. I wasn't able to comprehend this recovery program until I got the big book. And it wasn't until I read the big book that I started to feel like I could have a recovery. And I did lose that film career due to my eating disorder and my other addictions. But I have 24 years now, and I have done everything I did when I was using. I've gotten it all back and more. And I found my agent, and I am now friends with him. And I made my amends. And, you know, it's just a great thing that employers can have this book and read about it and hopefully stop their employees from hitting such a horrible bottom that they don't ever come back or die. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Marin K. Bruce E., you're up next, and then Julie E.B. Star one, Bruce E.
Okay, well, again, this is Bruce E., recovered in North Carolina. I'm great at talking to a muted phone, so I'm here. Thank you. And this part about two employers is really interesting. Since I've been in this vision, I've mainly focused on the earlier chapters, especially the doctor's opinion, but it's good to get into this. And reminds me of my careers. I had, excuse me, two different careers. First half of my life or third of my life or whatever was in the clothing business. And then the second half, I managed a small stock brokerage firm. And that first third of it in clothing business, the food wasn't the big deal. It was drugs and alcohol. And I was using those extensively all during that time. And needless to say that those clothing stores were not successful. probably as a result of that, and my ego. Finally got off of that and went right into the food. And I was in the food when I was in that managing that office. And I didn't extensively use food at work. I just, you know, worked hard during the day and drank and ate hard at night and on the weekends. But that definitely affected my job. And I was drunk on ego, you know. I mean, it was like sort of like all about me. Everything was about me. And, boy, I could have used this book then. I didn't have it. Finally, I got into OA eventually, luckily about halfway through that career. But I would, when I first had that office, managed that office, I would micromanage everybody. You know, I'd want to look, you know, the mailman had come, he'd deliver the mail, I'd want to look at all the mail, even though that was somebody else's job. And I wanted to just lord it over everybody, you know, and that was all about ego, I think, and control. And then somebody at the company told me, hey, quit, leave those people alone. Let them do their job. They can do your own job. So then I did my own job, and then I completely avoided everybody and isolated myself in the workplace. And then people were afraid to come to me and ask questions. So I go from one extreme to the other. Thank God I got into vision June 2nd, got recovered within a month or two, and I'm working a program now, and I'm feeling a whole lot better, and I can look at myself a lot better than I could back then. So thanks for letting me share here, and I pass.
Thank you, Bruce E. Julie E.B., you're next.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered, usually in Colorado today, visiting my son in
Julie E.B., we lost you. Star one, please.
Can you hear me okay? Wait,
I
have
can.
Two
the
earphones
last thing
intertwined.
You you're saying
sorry,
you're visiting
about that.
Your son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have. Anyway, this really touched me. Hearing about the junior executive, there was something about it. You know, I'm always touched by these sections that show that highlight to me in my past times people may have tried to reach me. And for me, I think some of the earliest attempts to reach me in the job and workplace were people that I was an extreme people pleaser and very social. So I looked like I had everything going on the outside. And yet I could not connect. And a lot of people couldn't really put their finger on it. And after a few, you know, 4 years at several jobs, I moved on to other jobs, geographical cure, they call it, when you move cross country, because that was going to be better, and that was going to be better. I was in a lot of pain because I thought life was happening to me, and that's the way this disease was for me when I'm in the food, when I'm in the restriction, when I'm in the mental obsession. And so even though people would watch my weight go up and down and in and out, they didn't know quite what to make of me. I remember one boss sent me to a psychologist center for like 2 weeks of sort of job rehab in terms of why I couldn't seem to get along with those around me in this transitional time, why conflict was so difficult for me. And I came out of there thinking, well, I'm okay. They're all messed up. You know, I got a few things, but other than that, meanwhile, you know, I was keeping a good outside appearance not physically, but in many ways, but I just couldn't connect. And that's the hope I want to share today. You know, it's this, in my last job, they told a leader in my field, you know, there's two of me. You know, I'd be fine with everything, fine, and then all of a sudden, nothing was good enough. And what they were describing, control, compliance. I do what you want me to do. And it just, you know, I ended up on that job taking a 4-month leave. That's when I was bedbound. My back was hurting. But I just want you to know there's hope for recovery, not just physically, but from these emotional, spiritual maladies. And today I can connect thanks to my higher power and all of you. Thanks for letting me share. Pass.
Thank you, Julie E.B. We're studying 5 paragraphs today. Page 147 is where you'll find us. Paragraph 2, there is another thing you might wish to do. Ending on page 148, the bottom of the third paragraph, give your worthwhile man a chance. Anyone else want to comment on those 5 paragraphs?
Christy B.
Jill F. Do I hear Christy B. and Jill F.?
Janet A.
Yes.
Janet.
Excuse me. I just got on. What? Can you hear me? What book are we looking in? Good. Thank you. What book are we reading in?
The Big Book?
Oh, okay.
Of Alcoholics Anonymous? Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to comment on those paragraphs? Hi, Wendy.
Liat TB.
Hi, Liat. Okay, so we have Christine B., Jill F., Janet H., Wendy M., and Liat TD. Good morning, Christine.
Hi, this is Christy B., recovering in Washington State. And the thing that actually really caught my attention was where it says, alcoholism may be causing your organization considerable damage in its waste of time, men, and reputation. And I think of all the number of times I would sit at my desk in such of a food fog that I literally couldn't do anything. I could barely answer the telephone, you know, and make any sort of normal talk. And I didn't realize how much of that I did because I did it all the time. I would binge at night and I'd come in the next day and I would be just unable to do anything for hours. And then on the times when I wasn't binging, I would micromanage everybody, and that was not my job. I would interfere with people, and then I was totally resistant to any change. Any suggestion to do my job a different way was practically met with a brick wall. And I didn't realize how much I really did that until I was reading, you know, the reading here today. And then the other part that jumped out at me was, if you are an alcoholic, you are a mighty sick man. And, you know, I didn't realize how sick until I really started studying this Big Book and realized how much I was trying to run the world. And it is such a relief now not to have to do that. And it's just, you know, it's an amazing, amazing book. And I really appreciate that. And thank you for the opportunity to share. And I pass.
Thank you, Christy. That's Christy B. Jill F., you're next. Star 1, Jill F.?
Hi, sorry about that, Melanie. This is Jill S. in San Diego. This reading hit every ounce of me, both as an employee and an employer over the years. I think I've done it all that they talk about in this, whether it be as an employee that lived for work or didn't live for work, depending on where I've been in my disease, whether it was all about the food or all about the weight I was so I could look good to everyone, as an employer, how I've acted in terms of my own fears driving the company's performance and therefore how I worked with other individuals. And what I've come to learn and truly pray every single day, regardless of where I am, is please, God, don't let me be afraid as much as I have been in the past. Because for me, whether it's the ego that's been driving it or the fear, they're all connected. And what I've learned is that, man, I have made people's lives crazy. Now, I know I can't make people anything, but the environment that I contribute to, I sure have made a mess of at times. And so the reality is I continue every day to live in the big book to the best of my ability, even so much as looking back at this morning when I wrote and saying, please let me not be afraid at a meeting today. Because when I'm afraid and I don't have you in my pocket, God, I have the real potential to act out and show up in a way that's not about others and contributing as the Jill that you created. And so, you know, I share the message of hope because truthfully, 2 years ago, before I got on this line, having been in program for a long time, I couldn't even tell you what I just told you. And it really is about my willingness through God to stay honest and to stay humble and to stay as good as everyone else at the table, because I am no better and I am no worse. And when I live in that way, I truly can be of service. And so I'm just so moved by these paragraphs today to help remind me that when I go out of the door this morning as an employer, that how I show up for other people is directly related to my relationship with God. And so thank you for letting me share, and thank you so much for being in this reading today. I sure as heck needed it, and so appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Jill, did you say Jill, S like Sam? I've been saying F like Frank. She might be in the process of muting.
Yes,
Janet H., you're next. Thanks, Jill. Appreciate it. Janet, you're next. Janet H., and then Wendy will come after you. Good morning.
Hi,
Janet.
This is Janet. Can I be heard?
You betcha.
Fantastic. I'm Janet H., recovering in Orange County, California, and I'm very grateful to be on this call this morning. Thank you to everyone doing service. I was thinking, as we've been going through this chapter, that I can't relate because I haven't been able to work in a long time. I'm disabled, and I have a lot of physical problems, autoimmune illness, and pain. Anyway, as I've been listening to all this, I've been also getting ready to go to my friends to be their dog and house sitter. And I was thinking last night about the fact that there was a time when, because I'm not just a compulsive overeater, also an alcoholic and drug addict, where if you left me in your house alone, something was going to be stolen or broken or messed up. Probably your meds out of your bathroom and the food out of your fridge, definitely the food out of your fridge. And I was realizing that I've been doing this for these people for a couple of years, and we've had no problems. They've been incredibly happy, considering me a part of the family now, and these are people I met through program service. And to me, that's an amazing miracle to begin with. And I've also worked in corporate settings, and I've also had my own business. But the bottom line is, until I got to this point in my recovery, and if it'll be 21 years on November 4th, if I make it that long, and that I'm at a point finally where I can just think of going to work as being a service. The first time I did this for these people was when their daughter died. Their 31-year-old daughter died of cancer. And I volunteered to take care of their dogs in their house, and I didn't want them to pay me, but they insisted they would feel better if they did. So I let them, and that was okay. We all were happy, and I could definitely use the money. But as I started doing it more often, more frequently, I realized my job there, you know, I was thinking originally of, oh, what meetings can I get to near their house and what friends might be able to stop by that live somewhere near there. I got to the point where I was like, you know, my job here is to take care of these little fur babies like they would want to know someone is, and to take care of their house like it's my own, and to make their trip, sometimes vacation, sometimes horrible family tragedy, more comfortable. And that became my goal when I stay there now. And that's it. I've got these wonderful little dachshunds who first thing in the morning get me out of myself. I'm not able to have a dog where I live, and it's an incredible gift to me. It's like I won the lottery when I'm there. I get to have dogs, my own house. It's amazing, and I love it. But the bottom line is they're incredibly happy because they feel so safe leaving their pets in their house with me. And none of that would have been possible without the program. And I do not tell them how hard it is for me to do the job or to get ready to go for the job. I had to start, and this is another program thing, I had to learn moderation and not just killing myself the last day to get everything in the car to get to their house because I end up in a flare and then I'm of no use to anybody. So I've been working for 3 days to get everything into the car and figure out how to do it without hurting myself. And that's my problem, and I don't tell them because my only job for them is to make them feel comfortable and feel good about their trip. Thank you for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Janet H. Wendy M., you're next, and then Liat TD will follow you.
Yes, good morning. Wendy M., gratefully recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you, Mel, for your service and everyone on the line. And thank you, God, for this big book, and thank you, God, for entire abstinence this morning. Being in the food is way harder than being entirely abstinent. Entirely abstinent is easy breezy compared to being in the food. So thank you, God, for the grace this morning. So a couple things I want to say. First of all, as an employee, the rules didn't apply to me. And don't you know who I am? And, kind of, how dare you make me work? Like, are you kidding? You know? And absolutely, you know, this notion that it says, if you're an alcoholic, you're a real sick man, woman. And then it says, you act like one. And that is so critical. That really popped up for me because I can sit down in an interview and woo and woo and woo people, right? Like, I've got this charismatic personality, supposedly. But more to the point, I can convince you that I am fabulous as an employee. But if you come into my classroom and watch how I actually am behind the scenes, it's not a pretty sight. It's not a pretty sight. So I just love, like, when I'm trying to convince someone of anything using my words, it has zero to do with how I actually act, what my behaviors are, you know, and that's the whole ninth step right there. So that's really humbling to say, you know, but what do my actions look like behind the scenes? If I think I'm alone somewhere, what do you see? What am I doing? And hopefully it's better, right? Recovered is I don't think the way I thought. I don't act the way I used to act. I don't eat the way I used to eat. Thank you, God, you know. And then the other thing that I want to say is I love the word sick one. Yesterday I called someone and she said, your head is in the crapper. You are really sick right now. Not you, Wendy, but your mind, the disease has got you. And to me, when she said that, I felt so much relief. I was like, oh, thank God. That's the good news. She was able to shake me out of my trance that I've been in for a very long time. And, you know, and she was able to say, let's shake this disease up. Let's wake it up. Let's wake you up to the fact that your mind has been sick for a while now. And the relief and the connection, immediate connection to God. Whenever I hear the truth, whenever I hear or experience what is actually happening, the truth of the matter, my shoulders relax, I get quiet, I get calm, I feel God's presence, and that's kind of how it works, right? Like, I'm miserable enough that I can call someone and they can shake me out of my trance and say, Wendy, your mind is quite sick right now. You know, and again, that's the good news, right? As my friend says, if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy M. Liat TD, you're next, and then we'll open up for a couple more people. Good morning, Liat.
Good morning, Melanie. Liat TD from Northern California, a recovered compulsive overeater and a very sick woman, indeed. Man, I loved what we read, and I loved hearing all the shares. I was thinking it must be really hard to approach. I've been an employer. I own my own business, so I got to have to send a few people home, and it's a hard thing to do. But nobody ever fired me. I'm sure I'm very fireable, though. What this brought to me is, are you in or are you out? And that's my life story. Are you in or are you out? You know, I spent 12 years on, in OA, you know, taking what I like and leaving the rest. And what I left is mostly recovery. I took what I like, which is sickness. And so, you know, 12 years, it took me 12 years to surrender and to understand that I am sick, that I need either entire abstinence or death with food. You know, either God or Liat. What do you want? And Liat is death. Liat is sickness. you know, when I'm at work. Is it work? Are you working or you're not working? Are you there for them or are you there for yourself? And that's the choices that I get in life. It's someone like me. That's there's no, it's like, you know, I am pregnant. You know, there's no a little bit of pregnant. I am pregnant. I am sick and I need to take life. I am extreme. I can't take what I want and leave the rest. I need to do the whole same deal. I need to completely surrender to God or completely surrender to the disease and disease and death. So it's in or out for me. And it's not because this is what you say. It's not because it's the right thing to do. It's because I am sick and I am digging myself a grave and I can't be there anymore. So I'll pass and I love you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Liat TD. We have space, looks like, and time for probably three additional folks to share on this paragraph today.
Hi, this is Charles H.
Hey, Charles.
Robin P. in Los Angeles.
Robin
Patty
P.
D. Hey.
And Patty D. That'll take us out. Works out. Hey, Charles, you're first, and then Robin P. and Patty D. Good morning.
Hey, Mel. Good morning. Thank you for your loyal service. This is Charles H., a recovered compulsive overeater. I want to drill down where it says, it boils right down to this. No man should be fired just because he's an alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. If he cannot or will not stop, he should be discharged. I am speaking from a person that has been discharged, and I thank my higher power for all those dischargements because they all didn't stick, but one did, right? One stuck. And as I said on the 7 a.m. morning, meeting this morning, it boils down to this, emotions and thoughts, right? You know, we hear on this line all the time, all action is born in thoughts. So when I get those thoughts, I get some emotions, whether negatively or positively, and then I act on them. So that this is the reason why I'm in Overeaters Anonymous and in this big book, because of thoughts and emotions. I had the thought and the notion that I wanted to stop, but I didn't stop. And I realized through experience that a higher power wasn't coming down and slapping it out of my mouth. I wasn't getting no gift. I wasn't rubbing no bottle to stop eating things in packages and things like that. It took desperation to transformation, right? And you know what? It's a daily thing. All I got is today. You know, I could talk about I got all these years, and I can talk about this, and I can talk about that. I could talk till the cows come home, and I could still be drinking, you know, in this case, eating. You know, there's no taking the tiger out of the cage. You know, I am the tiger, you know, a tiger full of thoughts and emotions. So, you know, it's the Wayne Dyer said this, rest in peace, it's the space between the bars that holds the tiger. And these spaces is the 12 steps as it's applied in this book. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
I didn't know you were
Charles H.
Commit meeting.
Hey, you guys are asking.
Let's see. I would like to call on Robin P. now, and then after that will be Patty D.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your service, Mel. God bless everybody in your recoveries. I'm Robin. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. And, you know, I get to be a good employer and to my the people who the person who works for me and be and really practice these principles in all of my affairs and really practice these principles in all of my affairs with everyone. And we're going through a huge change right now in our lives, and we're probably relocating and been dealing with some health stuff. And you know what? God is in charge, and God is my employer. And I just really love the gift of desperation and then followed by the steps, you know, in all my affairs, because that surrenders me to knowing and doing God's will. And when I'm in the center of God's will, I know all is well, no matter what it looks like. And I think that it's important. I've been an employee, I've been an employer, and in all my affairs, I just get to practice these principles and treat people the way I would want to be treated. And and act with love, kindness, tolerance, and patience. And when I'm selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, resentful, or fearful, I have a solution today, and it's in the steps. And thank God for you guys and your recoveries, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Robin T. And then Patty D.
Hi, this is Patty D., gratefully recovered in North Carolina. And I have to say that usually this chapter doesn't do a whole lot for me. As others have said, I usually like to read the first, all the chapters before this. But what struck me about the paragraphs we read today was the part that said about the alcoholic wasting the company's time and resources. And I never thought about that before. And my eating has done that in past jobs that I've had, where I would constantly be getting up and going to the break room to indulge in another piece of that treat that somebody brought in, or extending my break longer than I should have because I wanted to finish eating, or just, you know, going to the jar of sweets when I was stressed over and over and over again. And I realized that that was stealing time from my employer, and I'm just really humbled by just this paragraph and realizing that I was doing that. And I just wanted to share that. And also, thank you to everyone on the line in this meeting. I mean, right now, my husband and I are traveling, and I'm on an airplane, and I still get to listen to the big book. So thank you so much to everyone, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, Patty D. It looks like time will offer one more person to share on those five paragraphs. If you're interested, press star one. We'll grab you up.
Carrie M.
Carrie? Is that what you said? I think we're talking over each other. I was just wanting to be real clear. Is it Carrie or Terry? C or T?
T.
Thank you so much. Carrie M., it's yours.
Thank you. I really appreciate all of you being here this morning. I really liked when my sponsor and I read this part of the book together that she told me, you know, this chapter is here after step 12 because this chapter and the family afterwards, they are all about how to practice these principles in all my affairs, and I need to practice those where I work. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunity that I have a template now through the book, big book, so that when I blow it at work, I have a way to go to, whether it's a colleague or a supervisor, or in my case, students, to say that, to say I was wrong, I blew it, how can I make it right? And that just leaves people with so much hope, you know, that there is a better way. And whether that's them seeing how differently I eat, or whether it's seeing that I have this design for living that really works, that is step 12 in action. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Terry M. Thank you, everyone that shared today. Please stay with us after the closing and the serenity prayer as we continue to greet newcomers and get sponsor information. But in the meantime, I want to thank Team Thursday for making this meeting possible today. Marissa E., Libby E., Kathy Jo P., and Lynn S. So we'll close this recorded portion by reading from the big book on page 164, and we'll follow that with a serenity prayer. Lynn S., would you please read Our Book is Meant to Be Suggestive Only?
Hi, this is Lynn S. Can you hear me, Mel?
Sure can.
Okay. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.